Did the government, beginning in the mid-1970s and lasting till the early 1980s, conduct clandestine operations near Dulce, New Mexico, involving experiments with bovine diseases, anthrax, and other substances as part of a biological warfare research? And what else did they do? You've heard of Project Bluebeam as well. Up next, Norio Hayakawa joins us as we unravel these mysteries on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about Norio Hayakawa. Now, he is, and he calls himself, an unorthodox ufologist and activist. He has spent years investigating Area 51 in Nevada, and he says there is so much more to Area 51 than just supernatural and superficial facts made public about this well-known base. In 1990, he also began to investigate the strange goings-on at Dulce, New Mexico, after more than 45 years of researching the UFO phenomenon. He says that a conditioning of belief systems have been orchestrated since 1947 by a manipulative force that is preparing mankind for a future mysterious scenario. The ingrained and altered realities behind both Area 51 and Dulce will play a role, he believes, in that scenario. In March of 2009, he organized the very first underground base conference in Dulce, New Mexico, as well. He is also an accomplished musician. Later on in the program, Norio has sent us a few links to his MySpace sites, and we're going to play a little bit of that very unusual and fascinating music. Here's Norio Hayakawa back on Coast to Coast. Norio, how are you?
How are you, George? I'm so glad you invited me to this wonderful program, and I'm really excited. It's been more than 15 years, actually, that I appeared on, this dedicated program. I think it was in 1995.
Oh, my God. You were back there with Art during the beginning.
Yeah, I guess so.
And let me tell you, your theories, I'll call them theories just for a moment. In your work, the books you've written and your investigations are, I think, coming to the forefront now more than ever. Do you see that happening?
Well, I do think that people's thought processes have drastically changed and began to accept what I call, unorthodox type of interpretations of the entire UFO phenomenon and, conspiratorial angles. So I think that there's definitely a change in more understanding, towards more understanding of what's happening.
You see New Mexico as an important area for ufology and for other events. Explain that for us.
No question about it, George. There's something about this mysterious state of New Mexico. As you know, New Mexico is the fifth largest state in the Union, George, and yet the population is less than probably one-third of Los Angeles, and it's not going to grow drastically, in my opinion. It's going to remain the same, but the unique thing about New Mexico, George, is that I believe that this is where everything started as far as the meaning behind the so-called post-war history of strange lights seen in the sky. It all began for a purpose in New Mexico. That is my conclusion, and that is why 2 years ago, something told me to move from California to New Mexico, and this is where I retired.
And there you are.
That's right.
Now, tell me how you got involved in this, these investigations, your work with regards to Project Bluebeam. How did this all come about?
Well, actually, George, it's a long story.
Well, it's a three-hour show, so we can take it.
Yes. Well, first of all, what interested me in New Mexico was in 1964, when I was still living, and I was a high school student in Yokohama, Japan. And in April of 1964, I read a newspaper article. It was on the front page of an English newspaper in Japan, and the headline in the middle of the newspaper was something like this. Sees saucer sitting on sand. It's about the police officer, Lonnie Zamora.
Oh, sure.
Yes, and the title was the police officer sees saucer sitting on sand. And I was attracted to this article, and that's the beginning of my many, many years of serious research into this entire UFO phenomenon. And that really attracted me in 1964, and that could be a secondary reason why I came directly from Yokohama, Japan, to New Mexico. Basically, the reason I came here was to study the Spanish language as spoken in this state, which is very unique. So my main purpose was to study the Spanish language of the Southwest, especially northern New Mexico, which retains 16th, 17th century type of Spanish spoken by soldiers and so on.
Well, the Lonnie Zamora case of Socorro, New Mexico, is one of the, I think, best UFO cases ever recorded. Here's a police officer who spots this egg-shaped craft, these beans by it, whatever they might have been. Absolutely riveting. You know, we lost him last year, Norio. He passed away.
Yes.
What an incredible story. So I can see how that got you interested in this field.
That's right. I have... been reading so much material from organizations such as NICAP, which no longer exists, APRO, which no longer exists. I've done all of these things, and eventually something told me to come back to New Mexico because this is a significant state, and affinity with New Mexico. It's a fascinating state, and as I mentioned on my website, and you did mention too, that I believe personally that the year 1947 was the beginning of a conditioning of belief systems towards a segment of society carefully orchestrated for future events. And I was talking about New Mexico, but did you know that there are more scientists here per population in New Mexico than any other place?
No, I did not know that.
This is a fact. But yet the general educational level of the state of New Mexico is quite low. But, this is a fascinating place. It has the nation's most advanced weapons systems research and testing in the state. It's the state-of-the-art technology, you name it, leading-edge technologies in biogenetics, leading-edge technologies in directed energy weapon systems. These are all, just the tip of the iceberg of what New Mexico is about as far as the military technology is.
Norio, back in the early 1990s, you came out with one of your first works called UFOs, The Grand Deception and the Coming New World Order, which I think is so appropriate today. I want to talk with you about that as well as things that are going on in Dulce. How did you begin to research that? Because... I mean, it is just right now that new UFO researchers are starting to say, gosh, there's something going on. This new world order is moving quickly. You saw this a long time ago. What signs did you see?
Well, actually, back in 1995, I had a crazy video called Secrets of Dreamland. And in that video, my main thesis was that the covert government, if there were such a thing, would have sufficient technology to be able to artificially simulate or orchestrate some fake UFO threat to bring a forced global unity type of a thing to the future world if there will come such a need, see? And that was my main thesis. And the reason I tied that thesis into the idea of a coming global governance or global order is because, that would be the most... the ultimate way to bring a forced unity. And so I put two and two together. And, of course, around that time in 1994 or 1993, early 90s anyway, there were very few people who were espousing that type of, idea.
That's true.
Yes, very few people.
That's true.
And also... in 1994, I had a unique opportunity to correspond with a Canadian investigative journalist by the name of Serge Monast. And Serge Monast was one of the first persons to divulge what he believed to be NASA's secret plan called the Project Blue Beam.
Now, is he the one who died of a heart attack?
That's correct.
Okay, that's
exactly
him.
2 years later.
One and the same.
Yes, after two years later, after he came out, he had a strange, massive heart attack at his residence in Canada, and that was very strange.
Isn't it interesting and fascinating how so many vocal people who come up with these incredible stories and theories somehow end up dying?
Well, that is strange in many ways, definitely.
And, the whole thrust, I think, of Project Bluebeam was instill fear in people and then control them by telling them, we're here to take care of you. We're going to save you. But we need to do this with a one-world army, a one-world government. Noria, hold on for just a second. We're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come right back on Coast to Coast AM to talk more about this Project Bluebeam that so many of us have heard about. And also we'll get into some of these physical underground bases, whatever they may be, in Dulce, New Mexico. The great rocketeer, Mr. Von Braun, Norio, was also talking to some of his own employees and assistants, and he too talked about the possibility of a grand deception. So it's probably out there.
There's no question about it, George. The reason, as I stated before, why New Mexico is so important is because it was in 1945 that the United States, through a program called Paperclip, brought in a number of really smart, really...
Nazis.
Well, actually, that's true. Scientists, these were scientists that the United States government brought, and they were, of course, not only scientists, but intelligence officers of SS, and many of them... came to Albuquerque and were stationed at Kirtland Army Air Base at that time. And many of the scientists were then transferred to places like Los Alamos and then also to White Sands.
And there were more than 100 of these scientists that they brought here.
That's true. That's true. Plus, what's interesting is that they also brought intelligence officers, because the SS, the officers were very were excelling in the art of intelligence, art of information, misinformation, and manipulation of disinformation. These were very, very important elements. And in 1947, the United States began this Central Intelligence Agency, and many of the initial, ideas came from former German intelligence officers.
Sure. And I think one of the main reasons, Norio, they needed this Operation Paperclip is they were petrified that German scientific knowledge was going to get into the hands of the Russians, the Soviets. And so I guess they wanted to, you know, grab that brain power and at least bring it here.
That's correct. That's why, you know, I not only the in terms of military scientific aspects, but also other aspects of the technology, like biogenetics, too. And so today, Los Alamos National Laboratory is the world's leading edge research center for human genetics, biogenetics, and DNA research. And that is very interesting because only about 65 miles northwest of Los Alamos is a mysterious place, community called Dulce, New Mexico. The name of the town originally was Agua Dulce, which means sweet water. But after the United States government brought in the Jicarilla Apache Nation in there, they changed the name to Dulce only.
I see. Okay. So with Project Paperclip, which I think is so important as we get into what's going on at Dulce, New Mexico as well, this continued. I assume they paid them well, brought their families from Germany, all that, didn't they?
That's correct. In fact, the relationship of, you know, the German technology, German Luftwaffe, you know, the Air Force, is still, in that sense, can be seen in the fact that Holloman Air Force Base has had a large contingent of German pilots. Even today, they have a special, you know, program. But you know, it's a fact that the CIA, the which is the successor to Office of Strategic Services,
yes,
came into existence in 1947, and due largely to these you know, intelligence officers' suggestions and so on. But not only you know, this, but you know, the NASA and all these programs were you know, started with the help of German scientists' input.
Do you think some of these scientists, Norio, should have been held up on war crimes, but because we wanted their brain power, we just kind of forgot that?
Well, I can't tell, but it's a fact. It's a fact. And but anyway, you know, in 1947, in fact, probably in 1945, 1946, and 1947, I believe that there were several type of tests of new types of, you know, flying wing type craft that they brought from Germany, and they were tested in many parts of the Southwest. And this is a, probably a coincidence, but, you know, this is really, this is where it all started in White Sands areas and so on. And, you know, so what I'm saying, and I wrote an article before that it all started in 1947. Until 1947, there was no such thing as the Air Force. Suddenly, in 1947, the Air Force came into existence.
We also had the Kenneth Arnold UFO sightings.
That's right.
We got Roswell, New Mexico. Everything.
That's
started.
Correct. In 1947, the National Security Act passed, and NSA started. You know, a lot of things started in 1947. And as I said in the beginning, that I believe that year was beginning of the conditioning of belief systems aimed towards a segment of the population. But, you know, getting back to this place called Dulce, New Mexico, this is a unique place, George. This community, a town called Dulce, is under the jurisdiction of the Jicarilla Apache Nation. And it's a very large reservation. And the Jicarilla Apache Nation was brought in not too long ago, actually, in the late 1800s. And before the Hickory Apache Nation came to Dulce, the Hispanos, the people known as Hispanos, used to live there. Many of them were ranchers, and there are still a few Hispanos that are ranchers in the Dulce area. You know, overall, New Mexico is a beautiful state. The Dulce area is a beautiful region.
Sure is, yeah.
The climate is great. It's cold, but, you know, overall, the entire climate of New Mexico is so diverse. The people are, you know, it's a diverse culture, and it's a wonderful place to be with the four seasons. The cost of living is, you know, compared to California, is very less, you know, inexpensive.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful state, but it's truly a land of enchantment in the literal sense of the word. And that's why I love New Mexico. It's filled with mysteries and enchantment. You know, Dulce area especially is an area filled with the deep-rooted spiritual, cultural, and spiritual beliefs.
Extremely, right?
Yes, Native American, Hickory Apache Nation. And in fact, not only in Dulce, New Mexico, but a little west of Dulce, New Mexico, is basically the Four Corners area. And the Four Corners area of New Mexico, the United States, have always been a location of high, you know, a number of reports of strange flying objects ever since the 1945, and possibly before that, too.
Now, let's go back just for a bit to Project Bluebeam, and then we're going to spend all of next hour talking about Dulce and what might be there. How long ago do you think they concocted the program? Do you think it was around 45, 47? That's when they decided, let's come up with a grand deception. But did they really plan on it to occur, let's say, around 2010, 2012? Did they plan it out that long?
I think, I believe that they're taking time. They're taking time, and they're waiting for the change in possibly the attitude of the general population. In other words, there's this thing called paradigm. You know, most of the people in the world, they have a set paradigm, but the time will come, I'm convinced, in the future, or even possibly in the near future, whereby the paradigm of mankind will probably shift, either suddenly or gradually, I'm not sure. But until this happens, a lot of things may not be able to be orchestrated.
It is truly fascinating how they play on people's minds, isn't it, Noriel?
It's absolutely true.
I mean, they must have psychologists and psychiatrists on staff helping them come up with ways to trick people.
That's right. It's part of the so-called... overtly, it's called psychological operations or psyops. But, you know, this type of technology and this type of operations have always been a part of the strategy of the U.S. military. And everything basically started, as I said, initially, I believe it started in 1947, but as far as the actual ideas that were formulated to possibly conduct some kind of a future scenario may have come in the mid-50s or in the 60s.
Now, to some who are saying, okay, so what is Project Bluebeam? Let me read just a little paragraph here, and I'll have you react to this, Noriel. It says, one of these plans for Project Bluebeam is to stage an elaborate worldwide faked alien invasion with UFOs that will be seen in the sky. These will either be made on this planet with secret technology driven by craft operated by black budgets and military, or advanced holographic imagery. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I think it's a very, very, I think it's a realistic
possibility
because the United States Air Force already includes the use of holograms in the near future battle scenes. In fact, there was a program called Air Force, plan called 2025. In the program called 2025 by the Air Force mentions that the use of holographic projection, from the aircraft or satellites or whatever, that's part of the arsenal of the psychological operations in the future.
Did you see that picture over Norway several months ago of that spiral with the blue beam coming out of the middle? Many people have said that it could be a hologram, and if so, maybe it's a test to the beginning of Project Bluebeam.
Well, I think so. But, George, the first test of Project Bluebeam, in my opinion, came in New Mexico, namely in the Dulce area in the mid-1970s, and that is one of my hypotheses about Dulce.
All right, and when you say test, what happened?
Well, that area was a convenient, it still is a convenient location to conduct any kind of covert operations program because, first of all, it's in the jurisdiction of the Native Americans, and, it's in an area filled with beliefs in the paranormal, beliefs in their deep-rooted cultural, spiritual traditions. And it's a convenient location for the government to conduct psychological operations, all kinds of testings. This area is the most convenient location, and organizations like the Sandia Laboratories in Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, they have been working on many of these types of things as well, and near the Manzano underground nuclear storage complex in Albuquerque, inside the Kirtland Air Force Base, was the place where some strange lights appeared in the late 1970s, and I think it may have been some kind of a testing of a laser system or possibly a prototype of unmanned aerial vehicles as well.
In your opinion, what happened in 1947 in Roswell?
Well, in my opinion, George, we all tend to think in linear terms. Mm-hmm. We all tend to think in physical reality. But in my opinion, the idea of a crash is strictly a human idea. It's a linear thinking procedure. There's no such thing as crash. As far as I'm concerned, if we're talking about advanced entities. The only possibility of having the advanced alien craft, let's say crashing, is either by purpose or by staging that crash for a purpose. And maybe even sacrificing, or made appear to be a sacrifice, sacrificing one of their occupants, but, and so on. But I believe that it was staged.
By?
By, and this gets kind of strange, but I think it was staged by an unknown intelligence in collusion with part of our elitists of our government.
Well, you may be right. You may be right. We've always heard of the shadow government that is above government. As a matter of fact, I'm hearing more and more about that these days, that they, control, they manipulate, they create wars, they control elected officials who we vote for, but they're merely puppets, according to some who believe in this theory. And that could be what has happened, what happened in 47. And maybe what they wanted to do was just to have people talk about the possibility, as we are now, that some alien vehicle crashed. We confiscated it. We picked it up with bodies because that sure keeps that flames the fire, doesn't it?
That's correct. And this is why I have been saying all these years that the bottom line to all of this is that there's no physical, tangible, solid, irrefutable evidence that there is a physical underground base near Dulce. There is no tangible, physical evidence or documentary evidence that a physical craft from outer space crashed in Roswell. There's no physical, tangible evidence to any of these, but the belief is that, you know, it's about belief systems, George, and this is why I am, you know, I have been telling people that this is part of the deception, and we don't know what a physical reality, I mean, we don't really know what a reality is. We all just think reality in terms of physical reality, but there are other realities that's more real than a physical reality, and somehow everything is intertwined, and the government knows that there's more realities, levels of realities intertwined with everything. So it's so difficult and confusing, and that is why the government will never come up with any disclosure about the so-called UFO phenomenon.
We'll spend some time next hour, Norio, talking about the Dulce and what might be there. We'll get your take on that, and then I'm very curious with your incredible music, too. I've got a clip of Showdown at Dulce. Also, Lex has posted some clips of MySpace links of some of Norio's really incredible work, but there's a reason he does this. So we'll talk with him about what we call cosmic wave music when we come back on Coast to Coast AM, and his websites and his links, they're all there at coasttocoastam.com as well. If you need to email me, let's make it simple. George@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment with Norio Hayakawa on Coast to Coast AM. Norio, do you believe in the extraterrestrial presence theory at all on this planet, or even extraterrestrial life somewhere out there in the universe?
Well, this is a very deep question, and I have been doing this research for 45 years,
mm-hmm.
and my conclusion is that we do not, unfortunately, have solid, tangible, physical, irrefutable evidence about the actual physical extraterrestrial craft being piloted or maneuvered by physical extraterrestrial entities from outer space. That's the bottom line. See, the bottom line is when we're talking about physical proof, we just don't have it. But there are so many circumstantial evidences that there is some intelligence coexisting with us and are, pulling the direction of mankind into a certain direction for some unknown purpose in the near future. And so to answer your questions, yes, I do definitely believe that there are entities, but they may not necessarily be physical. This is where we all get hung up with the physical because we only can rely on physical reality. And when we talk about the so-called unidentified flying objects, a hero of mine, Dr. Jacques Vallée, said that, the things we call unidentified flying objects are neither objects nor flying. They can materialize, and mm-hmm. this is a very important word. And then also they violate the laws of motion as we know them. So, do believe that, these objects are not flying. They are materializing. And, it is very difficult to understand this. And, basically, yes, I do believe that we are being slowly led towards some kind of a paradigm shift by these entities that we cannot see with our physical eyes. And I'm saying this because my mother, who was a skeptic as far as UFOs were concerned, did have a typical flying saucer sighting back in 1975, and I completely believe her testimony. She saw a typical flying saucer with domes and almost like window-like thing around, and it was just instantaneous, but she saw it. And I believe her 100%, and this is why I say that there are people who seem to be able to see these things while some others are not.
Many people believe they're dimensional.
I definitely believe so, and this is the part of, advanced technology, future technology probably. So, you know, we cannot get hung up on physical reality only.
If this Project Blue Beam comes to pass, when do you think they will begin to implement it? And I mean by trying to trick us all.
Well, the only time that will be most effective will be in time of crises such as global war, global catastrophe of some kind, in which the bulk of the people will clamor for some kind of help, and that would be an ideal time. Even Kissinger said once that the best way to create global governance is to create a threat from outside, even if it's false.
So true. He was just in a hospital in South Korea. I guess he had some severe abdominal problems. I guess he's still holding on. But you're absolutely right. He's also the same person who advocates worldwide population control, Norio. So
that's true. So we're talking about two things going on at the same time. The government, or the covert government, I believe there is such a thing, by the way, their intention is to create an artificial threat, but at the same time, they are just as confused because in this world, there are indeed entities that we cannot see that is working on this level as well. And this is the reason why the government cannot explain this entire UFO phenomenon. No matter what the British government, whether or not the government's release UFO files, that has no effect.
Fascinating.
No effect until the explanation comes, and they don't know how to explain it because this goes beyond the physical phenomena.
Let's talk about Dulce, New Mexico. Let's talk about the underground possibilities, what might be there. We touched on it a little bit last hour. What's going on there?
Well, it's still going on. People are still, locals in Dulce are still reporting sightings of strange lights in the night sky, plus sightings of military helicopters as well, and even sightings, alleged sightings of what appears to be a description by the local people of the so-called Bigfoot, especially near the Navajo River. It's still going on.
Now, are they talking about a specific area at Dulce? Do they see an opening somewhere? I mean, where, if let's say there's flying craft there, or even helicopters, or troops, or biologists, where are they going?
Well, the allegation is that there is a huge multi-leveled underground bio lab a mile deep under the Archuleta Mesa, but that is just the so-called rumor. Actually, there is no physical evidence for any physical underground facility in Dulce, but there are circumstantial evidences that point to the most likely possibility that there is something there and this is the reason why these things continue. Just last December, I got a report of the strange low-frequency hums that are being heard about 6 miles northwest of Dulce along the Navajo River. And the low-frequency hums are being reported there even today. And so there's something going on in Dulce, New Mexico, and this is the reason why I held the first ever underground base conference right in the middle of the town of Dulce. This was last year, and this has caused a lot of, impact, and the local people, the Hickory Apache Nation, have always been very leery of coming out and giving out testimonies because it's part of their deep spiritual belief that these activities, these apparently paranormal type activities, are part of the religious tradition there.
What's your gut tell you about the Dulce? Is there something under there?
There's something under Dulce. I think there is a reality on another level that we may not be able to see with our physical eyes, but there is a reality that paranormal phenomena and even a base could exist on a level of reality that's not necessarily physical. In other words, my belief, George, is that in this world there exists a lot of things that we cannot see. For example, let's take a thought. I believe that thoughts can travel, and mankind has forgotten that. Any idea or concept or what they call logo, a word, becomes part of a reality in a level of reality. So anything that people imagines becomes real. Let's say that 200 people believe in the same description of an object, for example, a flying saucer with a similar dimension, a similar color. That thought will become part of reality on a level. And the more the people believe in one thing, the more the stronger that reality becomes in the level of that reality.
Some people believe that there could be some kind of underground biolab down there, that they're working on anthrax and other experiments on diseases and biological warfare.
Well,
what do you think?
Yeah, that is a very, very great possibility because, as I mentioned to you, from the 1970s and lasting till mid-1980s, there have been so many strange cattle mutilations in that area. And it's well known. And many of these cattle mutilations has a marking of a human element. In other words, many gas masks were even found on cattle mutilation sites. And certain cows were pre-identified with phosphorescent marking before they were mutilated. And a good friend of mine who had a large ranch in Dulce is convinced, and I believe him absolutely, that the government was working on the development of biowarfare, research and the germs and so on, mad cow disease, and these are tip of the iceberg. But what's interesting, George, is that many people have no idea that the United States exploded an atomic bomb in 1967 underground, just about 21 miles southwest of Dulce.
Why?
1967.
Why would they do that?
Well, the main reason, the government says, is that this was in order to ease the flow of natural gas in that area. And this...
what a way to blow the whole place up.
Well, this was done about a mile and a half underground near the Hickory Apache Reservation, and I visited that location, about 3 years ago, and you know what happened was that the government knew that there will be radiation leaks, but yet they did it, and even today, there are some kind of evidences that. There's a radiation, a certain level of radiation, and this is why some researchers, friends of mine, believe that the U.S. government wants to monitor some cows, specific cows in the ranch in Dulce, to monitor the level of radiation.
Do you think if the president was listening to this show right now in Washington on our huge affiliate, WMAL, and he was listening to us talk about shadow governments and the secret possible base, do you think he knows what's going on? Or do you think any president knows what's going on, Norio?
I doubt it, George, because it's not the president. I don't think that the president decides anything. It's the special interest group that really influences everything. George, when I talk about why I'm into this type of research is because I am against the destruction of the environment through certain type of black projects programs, such as that Area 51. And the whole world knows that because of the activism by groups such as the Federation of American Scientists and, you know, groups like us that have been fighting for the government to come out clean about environmental issues. And this, the reason the activism such as this has finally forced the government to admit that they were, they had environmental infractions in the Gloom Lake area, and so finally the government began to compensate the workers mm-hmm. who got injured and, got sick at Area 51.
They didn't want to in the beginning, did they?
That's right. In the beginning, they didn't want to. And so this is the reason why in 1998 I held the People's Rally right next to the boundary line at Area 51. And, movements like this definitely has an effect. And not only us, but people like Attorney Jonathan Turley of the George Washington University
yeah.
played a very important role in bringing this issue up so that the families of the surviving families of the, these workers can get compensation as well.
Area 51, do you think that we've got any craft there, ET craft, that we're doing any reverse engineering with? Now, when you talked about evidence, I assume you're talking about public evidence that we would all know about. What about black ops holding on to stuff like this?
Well, George, Area 51 is a humongous base that is alive and well even today. In fact, it's expanding. As you can see from Google satellite photos, there are many new buildings and the new water tanks, a new humongous hangar that was just completed 2 years ago. And just about a few weeks ago, they completed the paving of the Groom Lake Road all the way from the Groom Lake facility up to the past the guard shack. And right at the boundary line on Groom Lake Road, it's all paved right now. So it's expanding, there are anywhere from 1,800 to 2,200 employees at Area 51 working for various defense contractors like Northrop Grumman and, General Atomics and so on, Raytheon and you name it. It's a full-fledged research facility, but people get the wrong impression. But the area we've always been interested is about 10 miles south of Area 51, and that's where there is the alleged small facility called S4, where Bob Lazar has been talking about. So Area 51 has nothing to do, in my opinion, with any kind of extraterrestrial technology. It's just a leading-edge military avionics, aeronautics integration with weapon systems, and that's what Area 51 is about. However, since Area 51 is so close to the alleged site of the Sector 4, the S-4, this is the reason why people associate Area 51 with extraterrestrial technologies, and that is part of the contraption by the secret government to make us associate Area 51 with extraterrestrial technology, just like Roswell. The secret government, if I may, policy, I think, is to brainwash the part of the segment of the public into believing that an alien craft crash landed in Roswell, and that was taken to Wright-Patterson in Ohio, and then later on in the mid-50s transferred to Area 51, and that the back engineering program is going on. And that is the exact idea or concept that is being pushed for a specific reason.
Noria, when we come back, let's get your take on 2012, the possibility of some kind of disclosure as well, and then you've got to tell us about Cosmic Wave, your original music. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Noria Hayakawa, and we're going to talk about some of his work of cosmic wave music as well. This entire field is fascinating, and I'm glad you're into it. And what's next? Are you still investigating, Noria?
Yes, I am still investigating, and I have a big plan to welcome December 21st of 2012 by playing live music somewhere in the desert of New Mexico. I have not decided where yet, but I believe that there is a new era of human consciousness that could possibly come on December 21st of 2012. And a lot of people talk about 2012, of course, but 2012 is not about the year itself of 2012. It's only one day, one particular day of 2012, and that is December 21st of 2012, which I believe is the, a lot of people also believe that it's the end of one cycle of the calendar system and beginning of the new. So it's not necessarily the end of a world type scenario. It's the beginning of the paradigm change. And it could happen to a lot of people, whether one is aware or not. It could happen suddenly, or it could happen gradually, beginning on that date.
I know it's a Friday night, and we're going to have a program here, and you're invited to come on, too, and we'll see what happens.
Yes, great.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about your cosmic wave music and,
yes,
and what that is. I mean, you're an accomplished musician. You're very good. I've listened to your work today. And tell me about this. How did you start doing this?
Some inspiration started coming to me, a few years ago. First of all, in 2005, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of Area 51 in 2005, and I played a live music right next to the perimeter fence, and I brought the generators and amplifiers and keyboards, and a group of us celebrated the 50th anniversary, and I played a music which I created at that time called Area 51.
I love it.
Later, I changed that title to from Area 51 to Dulce. And then something told me, especially after I came to New Mexico, that I need to make a special music about New Mexico. And one was called the Showdown at Dulce, New Mexico. And
I've got that clip, too. You want to listen to it with us?
Yeah, sure.
All right, here we go.
Thank you.
Well, Norio, that's pretty captivating. Now, how did you come up with that kind of rhythm, that beat?
Well, I have been a longtime keyboard player, and I have several keyboards that makes me able to choose a particular rhythm, and I have to modify everything and play the melody and the music myself. But it's a self-contained unit. And my belief is that any music I create is for the public, so I don't have any CDs, but I just offer the public and give the public a chance to hear it by putting all my music on wonderful YouTube. And so if anybody just puts in my name, Norio Hayakawa, at YouTube, you can hear any of my music. And the latest one that I made, just a couple of weeks ago, actually, it's called Apache 2012. It's a catchy rhythm, and I made this song as a tribute to the people, the Hikari Apache Nation in Dulce, because I believe that the people of Dulce should not be afraid and should be able to come out and, you know, not be afraid to tell the public of their experiences and what's going on. So I dedicated this song, Apache 2012, to the people of Dulce. And anybody can just type in Apache 2012, and it'll come up right away on YouTube.
Fascinating work.
Thank you so much. You know, it's not that, you know, basically... Basically, George, I'm actually an old-time country-western musician.
Are you really?
Yes, I am a country-western musician, and at one time I used to travel to Canada in a country-western band, and it was led by a Cherokee person and by the name of Johnny Whitecloud, and I had a great time a couple of years while I was in Arizona. But, you know, George, you know... Besides being a former high school Spanish teacher, I was also a country western musician. And then finally, towards the last part of my life, from 1982, I became a licensed funeral director. And I just retired 2 years ago in Los Angeles. I retired from my work in Los Angeles and then moved to New Mexico. So I have a great diversity of careers, and that really helped me to understand human nature and the various philosophies of mankind, and it was a wonderful career. And now I'm retired, and now I can talk about all of these things.
That's fantastic. Well, you said you were born in Yokohama?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so a country singer from Yokohama, huh?
That's correct. yes, I'm actually from Yokohama, and I became a citizen of this wonderful nation in 1976. I'm a U.S. citizen. In 1976, at the 200th anniversary, I became a citizen.
Good
and
for
I'm
you.
Proud to be an American, and this is the reason why. My feeling is that the American government is really not, right this moment, what we know it is. It's been influenced and by a darker force.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true, and it's been going on for a long time. We've been talking about this now for at least the 7 years I've been doing this program now, Norio. And, you know, when I first started... And some people would tell me, you know, George, there's something else going on here. You know, I didn't believe them. I thought it was strange, preposterous in some cases. Not anymore. I just came back from San Diego this weekend and had a great time with our listeners there who listened to our affiliate, Kogo. And we talked about that. And I would say it's universally accepted now that they believe that there is a shadow government trying to manipulate, control, and push us into a one-world government.
No question about it. No question about it. And they use words like, you know, they try to soften up the words like global governance, which is a softer word. But in actuality, I believe it's a new world order. And that it's not imagination of conspiratologists. It's something real. And this is the eventuality. In any direction you look, globalism will be, you know, will be coming more and more. And I think, and I have a hope, that in 2012, hopefully, there will be a change of paradigm so that we can bring the world into a newer direction, new direction. And that is my hope about 2012. Perhaps nothing will happen, but you never know. It's 2012. The December 21st thing of 2012 is basically a personal thing. It's a personal transformation, and I believe that one person, even one person, can transform himself and bring in a new paradigm. It will affect other people. So, you know, but I'm sure that there will be quite a number of people that is willing to transform themselves and welcome the new paradigm that includes the new understanding of the human consciousness and the consciousness, this of cosmic consciousness. I believe this is the this is what we are waiting for.
Let's talk a little bit about disclosure. If we believe we're being visited by something, will we ever get disclosure from government? I think not. What about you?
No, I think not. Not at all, because the government is not in the business of explaining things other than the physical phenomena. And this entire mysterious so-called UFO phenomena, the flying saucer phenomena, if you may, is not only a physical phenomenon, but it's a phenomenon that involves the unseen reality, and it involves, it will go into spirituality as well. In fact, this is the reason why the government does not know how to explain, because people are going to clamor for explanation of the UFO phenomena, and there's no answer that the government can do. And so it's not going to be the government that is going to initiate the disclosure, but it will have to be either the entities themselves or the people.
I'm glad there's some people out there like Stephen Bassett and Dr. Stephen Greer who are pushing for disclosure, hoping that something will happen. If we're being visited in some form or fashion, do you think it's going to be through a whistleblower that we'll find out what's happening?
Well, I cannot say this, you know, one way or the other. I think more and more evidence of some kind will come that we're encountering some phenomena that we cannot explain. Let's take, for example, what's happening in the Cleveland, you know, the Lake Erie situation, where there's a nightly appearance of a mysterious light. But again, when you look at all these films, footages, it's apparently, it's some kind of a materialization. It's not a flight or an object flying. So, again, as I said many times, and I concur with Dr. Jack Vallee and people like John A. Keel, that we're facing a phenomena that cannot be explained by empirical science. This is the bottom line of everything. There is a phenomena in this world that we cannot see, and then some people can see, and then there's a phenomena that can be, cannot be photographed in clear definition.
How do you think the shadow government got their budget, got their money? How do you think they skimmed it?
Well, I believe that there are many programs, covert operations that bring in fundings. For example, in the 70s, 80s. I believe that the drug operations were part of it. And,
yes.
You know, yeah, there's corruption.
I've got to tell you, you've got your finger on the pulse. You really do.
Well, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time. And, you know, as I said, in 1995, my thesis was that there could be a secret government that is using technology to deceive the public and, you know, for a future event that they could orchestrate, for example, by the use of, as you mentioned earlier, the Project Blue Beam. Now, you know, there's no factual evidence that there is such a project called Project Blue Beam, but, you know, just by looking at the new policies of the Air Force, for example, the Air Force 2025 program, there's the Airborne Holographic Projection program that is being drawn as part of the program. You know, in olden days, you had to have some kind of a screen in order to project a holographic image. For example, you had to have a like a cloud, a dense cloud cover as a screen. But there are technologies, I believe now, that you don't have to have a cloud formation to project a holographic image. I believe that there are technologies that can actually create a screen that is from a high technique viewpoint stand. And so I'm not a scientist at all, George, but I know. And I'm interested in the philosophy of weapons development systems. You don't have to be a scientist to go into this kind of a thing, but the technology is advancing so fast that we are living in a world where we can be deceived easily.
Sure.
We have to make a distinction what is real and what is not real, because these technologies which could be manipulated by elitists in the future, could be used against the citizenry.
Let's talk about the scenario, the Project Blue Beam scenario of the false alien invasion. How do you think they'll do it in terms of the holograms? And will we wake up one morning? Well, can you have holograms during the daytime? I don't know. This will probably be a nighttime event, don't you think?
Well, the so-called Project Blue Beam is not only about the holographic projection of images, religious images, but it's also the use of the sound waves and various kind of frequencies to control the brain, and that is integrated with the bombardment of certain magnetic waves and so on from the satellites and from so-called airborne projections. And that doesn't only have to be holographic projections. Did you know, George, that there are technologies whereby through the use of holographic techniques, one can actually project the image of something that is much larger than what it is. In other words, maximizing the image. That's very possible. There are technologies where they can actually make a person believe that they're seeing a mile-wide object in the sky, where in reality it's not that case, but the observer will be convinced that they're looking at a mile-wide object.
Hmm.
So this type of technology is being developed, and it has been developed for many years, actually. But I believe that certain psychological operations have been using that kind of image-maximizing holographs.
Well, that's going to be a fascinating moment indeed. Let's hope we're all prepared for it when it happens, huh? And we don't panic.
That's correct. That's the name of the game, is the panic. And anyway.
Well, we shall see what happens there. Norio, do you travel much anymore?
Well, I don't travel too often these days, but I am planning to go to Roswell this year because they invited me to play music in the Roswell Festival, and I'm planning to play the cosmic type of music as well as country music too, but in Roswell. So that's about the extent of travel I will do, but I will also go to Dulce area again. I will also go to the other locations in New Mexico, such as I will visit the new the spaceport that they're building.
Okay, well, next hour we'll take phone calls with you. Norio Hayakawa is our special guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back, and let's go to the phones. Norio, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Here we go. We'll pick it up by going to Van Nuys, California first. Bob, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, thanks. First-time caller. Not first-time caller. I mean first one in tonight.
Yes, you are.
Thanks. Yeah, here's something really interesting. I have a weird take on the same thing, too. I'm sure your take will maybe be a little bit different. Your guest's take will be on it a little bit different. But I was wondering what your guest thinks about that weird, mysterious, so-called Russian missile that went out of control over Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was looking at, this is what I think, I don't know, this is what I'm thinking about, because we all know that the planets are going to line up somewhere around 2012, and we know that's going to pose a major stress on the sun, which it could have a solar flare, and I'm thinking that Russia is using a device to spin around to keep the, you know, the gamma rays are trying to protect the citizens, and I think the HARP and the spraying that's going on, the chem sprays, is an iron-based material that they spray over populations that they're going to energize with HARP and protect us from gamma radiation from the solar flare that's going to happen around 2012. And that would seem like an intelligent thing. But looking at that device, it looks like an anti-missile system, doesn't it? That thing's firing around in case they're attacked by nukes or something.
That's what Richard Hoagland thinks it is. They captured this Russian missile with some kind of anti-missile device.
And you know what's sort of weird? That happened exactly at the same time when our intelligence force, I know some people in the military, and they told me just maybe 3 or 4 days after that so-called anti-missile test device, that we found out that Bin Laden has been aiding, and Russia's been aiding and abetting Osama Bin Laden over a border, because we were trying to get him recently with some troops in there, and the Russians were protecting the guy. And we're going, what the heck is this? Russia's aiding and abetting this guy? Are they insane? And then our government, their guys were telling me that we're negotiating with Russia because there's, you know, there's borders and stuff near Russia where where he's been going. So
let's get Norio's take on this. Norio.
Well, I'm not really an expert on this type of situation as far as rocketry and so on is concerned. But, a lot of people do believe that the Norwegian spiral phenomenon is could be a result of the partially from HARP project. But, did you know, George, that the HARP project itself is an offshoot of the Project Blue Beam? Actually, in many aspects, it's very similar, but the HARP is diversified. Plan is to, in the future, to create a gigantic screen in outer space, and then bombarding, many types of magnetic waves, and then creating screens where they can bounce the waves and measure things where the underground bases are and so on, and even projections of holograms. But, I'm not really too familiar with this, the Norwegian spiral phenomenon, but it's interesting. No question about it.
Okay, next up we go to Chicago, Illinois, first-time caller. Tom, good morning.
Ohio gozaimas, gentlemen.
Tom.
I spent some time in Yokohama during the Vietnam crisis. I was at Camp Zama.
I see.
Yes, I've been studying metaphysics and spirituality for about 43 years. I have not gone public with anything. I'm sure I'll be on George's show someday. But I was drawn to New Mexico this past year. I only spent a couple days, but I did have a few unusual phenomena. First of all, I was struggling with some emotional issues with my kids, And all of a sudden, in front of me, while I was driving by the mountains, a cloud, literally in front of me, huge, formed a shape of an angel with a trumpet, which is the logo of my publishing company, which is related to the seventh trumpet in the book of Revelation. And that was really freaky. And then that night, I was in a park by, I don't know if you ever heard of Lake Okie by Logan. I was on that lake. It was a national park. The guy said there will be crowds of people coming because it was a holiday weekend. Nobody showed up at night or in the morning. I was there all alone all night. I slept in my car, and what happened was my car was shaking from high winds, and it woke me up, and I looked up, and there were these ominous clouds hanging directly above my car with electrical lightning coming out of, and no rain. No rain for like an hour's, just this cloud and the lightning just sitting over there. And that was really, really unusual with going there to New Mexico.
Yes.
And then I wanted to ask you real quick, the guest, have you ever heard of Peace Love Productions or Acid Software?
I have not.
Okay. My son developed some software that you probably use in some of your orchestration.
Interesting. Fast. Is he selling it? Is he doing well with it?
Yeah, he develops software for musicians. His main name is DJ Puzzle, and he lives in Chicago, but he distributes it all over the world. And he was working for Sonic Foundry in Madison, and then they were bought by Sony.
Okay, well, so, good for him. Thank you so much for that. Let's go to a couple more calls here. Tom in Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Sure.
I've had several experiences, or I should say my father did, when we were living in New Mexico, which, by the way, I agree with your guest, that is extremely enchanting, magical state. I'd say of all the 50 states, it probably has more to offer on a spiritual and cultural level than anything anywhere else. He was involved in the V2 rocket development program in the late 40s and early 50s in Holloman Air Force Base. And he told me one time, he said, every time we would fire a rocket downrange, it would invariably be tracked by one or two UFOs all the way down. And also, a good friend of mine had an uncle in Socorro, New Mexico, had a large ranch out east of the city. And he said there were lights leaving his back of his property in formation at night and daytime. He would occasionally see silvery objects also heading south, apparently toward the White Sands missile range. And he decided to go on the back of his property because he was missing some cattle. And he got just at the foothills to these low mountains at the rear east side of his property. And he said there was a 30-foot white saucer, silvery saucer, that stopped him from going any further. And he said he never, ever tried to go to the back of his property again. My father was also at Sandia Base, New Mexico, in Albuquerque, and he attended a conference, a very high-level conference, at MIT in 1953 during the summer. And all the damage, the paraphernalia, the uniforms, the wreckage, everything else from the Roswell incident was all on display there. And they had a complete explanation to the elite of the technology in this country, people from the military, people from Sandia, from Caltech, from MIT, and everything were being explained to that this actually happened, and that we were worried at the time that they were doing early reconnaissance on this planet for the purpose of coming back and invading and taking us over.
Very interesting, yes. Tom, as you stated, New Mexico is indeed a mysterious state, enchantment, really in that sense of the word. And you know what? Tomorrow, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, will be the 60th anniversary of the massive UFO sightings in the U.S. history that took place in Farmington, New Mexico, exactly on March 17th, 1950, and it lasted for 3 days. And this sighting, you know, talk about the largest mass sightings of UFOs in U.S. history. We're not talking about the Phoenix Lights. We're talking about the amazing armada of flying saucers witnessed by hundreds of citizens in downtown Farmington during the broad daylight from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in 1950. And they were witnessing an armada of flying saucers that numbered about anywhere from 300 to even up to 500. This is the greatest, the largest mass sightings of flying saucers in the U.S. history.
What could they have been, Norman?
We have no idea. We have no idea. It happened in 1950, and it was the headline news at the Farmington Daily News. And there are a few people that live today in Farmington that can tell you of what they saw. And a few years ago, I visited Farmington. I went to the senior center, and I found several people who told me about that amazing sightings. And this is why I believe that the Four Corners area, as well as the Dulce area, as well as the Aztec area, as well as the north of Dulce up to southern Colorado area, is you know, filled with sighting reports. And this gentleman just told me about you know, Tom, about the flying saucer sightings.
Yeah.
In near Socorro as well. But did you know that in 1964, in April, the month of April, the very same month of the sightings by Lonnie Samora in Socorro, there was an allegation that an object landed in the same month, in 1964, at Holloman Air Force Base, and some kind of exchange was conducted between the U.S. government and these entities. That is still being talked about even right now. So there's so many mysteries hidden in this state. He meant, the other guest mentioned about seeing weird clouds in New Mexico. Yes, New Mexico has definitely amazing diversity of cloud formations. New Mexico generally have deep blue sky, clear deep blue sky, but occasionally it has some strange, colorful clouds hanging around, and this is a fact.
Let's go to Merced, California, west of the Rockies. Adrian, it's your turn. Hi.
Hey, George, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I got a question about the, what was it called, those holographic images,
mm-hmm.
of those and stuff?
Sure.
So why exactly would the government and the military want to have the U.S. panic?
Ah, okay.
A UFO invasion.
That is the good question. We believe it's to create the one world government. If there's panic, people will say, help us. Create the problem, create the reaction, and then the solution. It's what David Icke has always called, the panic reaction solution formula. You create the fear, and then you come in with the solution. And that solution is the one world government, the one world army. Would you agree, Norio?
I definitely agree. That will be the most ideal way to forcefully, you know, subjugate the population into one unity, to create an outside threat.
Coming sooner than later, you believe?
I think it's possible. Just looking at the world events and world
right now,
economic conditions, things are happening.
Absolutely. I mean, I think they're softening us up with the economic condition. And everything else that's happened here over the years, and now they're going to come in for the grand finale. You know, and people will simply say, do what you got to do. And that's a shame. Let's go to Alexander, Louisiana. It's got to be Cornelius.
Yes, sir. How you doing,
yeah,
George?
You're the only one there in Alexander, Louisiana. I know.
Mr. High Cow, God bless both of y'all, and I want to thank Jason, your call screener. I see you gave Tommy the night off for his birthday.
He sure did.
Sure. But my question, and I don't know if he's studied the Bible or anything like that, they may do like this false flag with the rapture or something like that. So that was my idea, and I'll just let y'all take it, and I'll take my answer off the air. God bless both of y'all.
Okay. I don't know. Do you get biblical at all, Noria?
Well, actually, I try to balance everything. It's just a matter of terminology and interpretation. So, you know, in this world, there are words that actually have different meanings to each person. And, you know, some people believe in the so-called evacuation or so-called rapture. A mysterious phenomenon. Some people believe that's going to happen, but my belief is that anything could be staged, and any beliefs could be manipulated by the government or secret government itself in order to make a person believe. For example, you know, a religious person can interpret certain things in a religious way, but we have enough technology. These days, and the technology is rapidly multiplying at a rapid rate. And so it's amazing what kind of technology we already have now, and that could deceive a lot of people, and that could involve the religious beliefs of each person.
Absolutely. We'll squeeze in one more before the break. We'll go to Virginia. Sean, it's your turn. Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
Yes. How are you?
Good.
Good. I grew up in New Mexico in the early 70s. My father worked for the government. He was out there at Kirkland, and he spent a lot of time White Sands, going different places. He's since retired. He was transferred up here to the Pentagon and worked around several bases out this way and stuff. But I can remember my dad spent a lot of time up in Dulce, got sent up there for a lot of stuff.
Mm.
And I don't know. Are you familiar with Stone Lake, Norio?
Yes, I heard about Stone Lake. I heard about the Vado, El Vado Lake. These are very interesting lakes. There have been sightings of strange things in these areas and these lakes.
Well, we used to spend a lot of time up at Stone Lake, and my father would take me up there. And many times, I remember my grandparents, the Jicarillas, had built a new little small resort on the side of the lake there and stuff. But we'd go up there and camp. But I can remember my dad would, especially during the summer, he would often leave. Sometimes just, you know, on the spur of a moment, he'd be gone. Sometimes he'd be gone overnight, but he'd come back. You know, we'd stay there and we'd camp for like a couple weeks, you know, with the grandparents and stuff. But we used to spend a lot of time between Dulce and Stone Lake. And I remember one time my father had taken me up, and he always went up there. He had kind of like, an average pickup truck with a small camper on it. You know, he went up there just kind of, kind of low-key and everything. But I remember one night we were going up there real late. And we stopped somewhere before we got to Stone Lake. And normally I would sleep in the back of the camper if we got up there real late. But I remember coming in, waking up one night. We had parked. It was just me and my father. And I remember looking through the front of the camper, through the front of the windshield, and something had stirred me. And I saw something that had come down. It was hard to make out the shape. There were very small lights on it. And there were like a couple men, and there were some small lights, you know, on the ground and everything. But I remember that this thing came down, and it didn't make any noise. Couldn't feel any vibrations or anything like that. But as soon as the thing had came down, I was looking down like a gravel road, maybe, 75 yards or something like that. And I remember the thing had come down, and when it came down, there were some lights that had come on, and it looked like what was lowered out of this thing was a cow.
A cow? We've heard of things like that. Hold on. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let's go back to Sean in Virginia. So, Sean, a cow was being lowered from this craft?
That's what it looked like to me. It was hard to see that exactly and stuff, but that's what it really looked like to me.
That's very interesting, because there is, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I know of a family, a rancher, a well-known rancher in Dulce, who no longer has a ranch because they lost
17 cows between 1975 and 1985, and equivalent of $100,000 they lost. And they had to sell those ranches, and there's just a grocery store in a little area. But according to his testimony, yes, they people have seen the cows being dumped on a tree from what appeared to be either a helicopter or some kind of a craft. And the fantastic thing about all of this is that there are many reports in the Dulce area where people thought they seen a helicopter, but they weren't sure, because that helicopter had a shield of something, energy of something, that made it look like a flying saucer. And, you know, this rancher told me that some of his cows were selected, pre-selected before they were mutilated. And so, you know, the association of cows being dropped or lowered by some kind of a craft is not a far-fetched story. It could be true.
Oh, we've heard stories of cars getting hit by falling cows, remember? I mean, how bizarre can that get? Who knows where they came from? Let's go to Santa Monica, California. Jeremy, you're up with us. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey. How you doing, Norio?
Okay.
Oh, hello, Jeremy.
Hey, Norio's a good friend. I just wanted to say, I had a chance to spend some time with Norio in New Mexico. And Norio's like an incredible researcher and really opened a lot of doors. And, you know, he's been having a lot of meetings lately, and it was just a fascinating experience kind of looking at all these phenomena through Norio's eyes, because I think he has a real unique perspective. And something I was hoping maybe you'd touch upon a little bit, you know, right in your backyard, Norio, is, you know, how Paul Benowitz relates back to the Dulce situation, and kind of just get a little bit more from you on Dulce, because that was some of the most fascinating stuff we talked about.
Yes, Jeremy, this is a very good question, because we cannot discuss the Dulce rumors unless we bring in Paul Benowitz, who was a scientist who lived right next to Kirtland Air Force Base. And in 1979, 1980, he used to observe some strange lights over Manzano Underground Nuclear Storage Complex, 1979, 1980. And what happened was that the Air Force got worried that this person was seeing these things, and they took him to the base, and they made an explanation that these were alien craft. And actually, the Air Force at one time tried to focus his attention away from Kirtland, and they allegedly pointed him north to New Mexico, and that's where the whole Dulce thing started. But the funny thing is that, yeah, there is still something. There is something going on in the Dulce to begin with. But yes, I believe that there was a psychological manipulation to this Paul Benowitz, and Paul Benowitz was doing a business with the Air Force. He was a specialist in military-grade humidifiers. But Paul Benowitz, in my opinion, knew that he was a target. And a lot of people believe that Paul Benowitz was brainwashed and by the Air Force, making him believe that there's a base in Dulce, New Mexico. But I think, personally, that he was aware that he was the target of this thing. But independently, Paul Benowitz went to Dulce. He flew over Dulce many times because he was also a pilot. And he came to the conclusion, yes, there is something there. So, you know, this is my take on Paul Benowitz. He is a very, very important person in the Dulce story. And even today, his company, the Thunder Scientific Corporation, is operating right next to Kirtland Base and doing business with the Air Force.
So many strange things going on out there, Norio.
It is
so
true.
Many strange things. Do you see any more media go out that way, or do they back off?
What
Any media, any television go out there to investigate?
Oh, yes. You know, a strange thing is that, well, the media doesn't really know these things. They have no idea what Dulce is. In fact, a city such as Albuquerque, by the way, I live in Rio Rancho, which is right next to Albuquerque, but Albuquerque has lots of military personnel, lots of scientists living and defense contractors living, but there's not even one UFO organization in Albuquerque except for one, which we actually helped create a couple of years, last year, actually. It's called Albuquerque UFO and Paranormal Forum. But, you know, the news media in New Mexico don't seem to be focusing on these supernatural aspects of New Mexico as much.
No, not at all. Next up, we go to Pennsylvania. Gary's a first-time caller. Good morning, Gary.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Good talking to you. Long-time listener. This is actually my first time calling. My real question was, anything recent or come out of Iraq with any of the veterans? I mean, I personally, you know, have my experiences with objects that we couldn't really describe, and I was just wondering if
we've had some reports of that. Norio, I'm not sure you've investigated that, have you?
No, not really. The only thing I was interested is in the 1993 report of made by CNN about the use of you know, psyops involving possibly holographic projections at one point during the Iraqi war.
Well, I mean, I know we fired upon one when we were there in 04, and that was, I mean, nothing really ever happened to it, but we messed it up pretty good. I mean, the way you describe some of these things is they're fairly ethereal, you know, not really there. But, I mean, when we had contact with it, was pretty solid.
You heard a ping and when you shot at it?
Well, it was trailing us for a while. Paralleling us on MSR Tampa heading down to Baghdad, and we thought it was a chopper at first. When we called HQ, they said they didn't have any aircraft in the area. So we tried to saw blade it, which is where you take like an infrared chem stick and put it on a 550 cord and you twirl it around, and you can see that for miles. We figured at that point, if it was a chopper, it would come toward us or let us know for on the radio, but we didn't get anything. We called HQ again to let them know because our rear gunner was telling us as it's it was too low and it was knocking out the power lines as it was flying over parallel to us. HQ told us to pull over and try to make contact. And so we saw bladed it with the infrared chem stick and it started to approach. And it threw a searchlight upon our convoy, which is only four vehicles long because we're just doing a route recon, and it knocked everything out on the vehicles.
Jeez.
So at that point, our convoy commander just told us to light it up, which, you know, it was only about 20 seconds, and the thing rocked backwards from the impact. And we tried to see what it was. It was triangular in shape, round. Rounded edges. We didn't see any windows of any kind.
And there's no way it was a drone, Gary, right?
Ah, I don't know.
No, I didn't think so.
No, but we fired on it twice, and the second time it rotated to the southwest and listed off. And at that point, we waited on the side of the road for a good 2 hours because we missed our arrival time. So QRS showed up and finally got us wreckers. And the mechanics didn't know what to do with the vehicles because they were all deadlined.
Jeez. Norio, have you heard this before, these kinds of stories?
Not too often, but it's a fact that the sightings do seem to still occur in the battlefield areas.
There's some interest there.
Yes, definitely.
Whatever. First time caller, Gary, thank you so much. Let's go next to South Dakota. Dave, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, David.
Hi.
Go ahead, Dave.
I had a something that's been baffling me for years. This is basically directed for Norio. As a musician and a recording engineer, I tested a piece of software, like this is many, many years ago, 15 years ago or so, and it was called Cool Edit Pro or something, and it had this filter or effect called like a psychoacoustic alpha wave generator, and it just seemed really bizarre that this piece of shareware would even have something just that sort of esoteric, and I played with it a little bit, and it basically just kind of made the sound kind of wave. I don't know. It made it. You could tell that it kind of wavered in a certain frequency that I'm guessing is similar to like what alpha waves would be. But the question is, I mean, what's always baffled me is why would a sound editing program add something like this filter, and I'm wondering if Norio, if you've heard of anything like this, and if it's useful, if you use this, if you've heard of anything like this.
No, I haven't heard things like this, but basically I'm just a very simple musician that believes in melodies, beautiful melodies, and yet can, you know, I believe in creating an ethereal type of atmosphere. But basically, I'm still a melody person, and I like to create melodies, catchy melodies, combined with the ethereal ambience.
You're like a one-man band, aren't you?
That is.
Okay, let's go to Aaron. He's on our Skype line in Winnipeg, Canada. Hey, Aaron, go ahead.
Hi.
You there? Aaron?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me good?
Not anymore. Go ahead.
All right. I'd just like to talk about you're talking about those German scientists there.
Paperclip, yeah.
Yeah, Operation Paperclip. Yeah, they were Nazis, like Jack Parson and Wernher von Braun there.
Mm-hmm.
Brought over because of their knowledge of the missile and rockets. But they had a plan for a UFO craft there that had been built actually around World War II, the beginning there, powered by like 16 BMW engines, I would think it was.
That is true. The Germans were trying to perfect a UFO, and some are wondering if that was reverse technology, Norio.
There are many, many, stories that link the German technology with the things like the Alboran and Thule Society and so on. That's a very interesting story. But the fact is that the Germans were experimenting on various items such as wingless aircraft that was already in existence in 1943. The V-shaped flying wing technology was there, and some of these may have been brought to the U.S. In 1945, probably other things as well.
Time for a couple more calls. Kentucky we go. Don, take it away.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good, Don. Thanks.
I just have a question. I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico for 4 years while I was stationed at the University of New Mexico NROTC unit as the AMOI. And I was just wondering, because of the Spanish conquistadors and the Pueblo Indians, the Utes and the Sioux with the Phoenix and everything else, do you think that could be a reason for the spirituality or the unidentified objects and everything else being more in New Mexico area than anywhere else?
That's a very, very, that's a very, very good question, and that is basically my belief, too, that New Mexico was chosen for a lot of these projects by the government because of the presence of the deep cultural or spiritual beliefs of the Native American peoples, and also for the fact that it's a beautiful state with a beautiful areas, mountains, deserts, perfect climate in many ways, dry climate, but all of this combine to make New Mexico really a land of enchantment, and therefore the government knows about all of this, and it's a convenient location for the government to set up a lot of experiments as well.
Norio, this hum you were talking about earlier, is it still going on?
It is still going on. You can actually hear the hum from the latest report about 6 or 7 miles northwest of Dulce. And this was reported on the Pagosa Springs Times newspaper just last year. The entire area north of Dulce, Dulce is right next to Colorado. And the Archuleta Mesa and Archuleta Mountain pass through Colorado, and there are strange hums in this region. There was a strange hum. Everybody knows about the hums of Taos in the 1980s, but some people believe that these hums could be, conducted by Sandia Laboratories. In fact, Sandia Laboratories was called during the Taos hums, but I think it was the Sandia Laboratories themselves that may have been involved in the creation of these hums. Some people believe that there's tunneling going on from these areas even up to Colorado to the Denver International Airport, from Los Alamos to Dulce, to northern New Mexico, to the Colorado Springs NORAD. And so there are lots and lots of fascinating reports coming even right now.
Do you find that area to be pretty supernatural, pretty mystical?
It's pretty mystical from the very beginning. And that's why I said time and time again that it's a convenient place in the beginning, from the very beginning, to set up PSYOPs, the operations, knowing that there is a phenomena there. And I believe that there is an unseen phenomena in all of this. And that's my bottom line, that in this world there exists a phenomena that we cannot study by the so-called empirical scientific method. There's more to this world than what we can just, be explained by scientific methods.
Norio, it's been years since you've been on. Let's not have that happen again, okay?
Okay, I'm really happy, George, for this opportunity.
All right, my friend. That's Norio Hayakawa.